Google throws down the virtual gauntlet.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Stacey Vanek Smith. It is all-out war in Silicon Valley. A month ago, of course, Microsoft launched a search engine called Bing. That was supposed to compete with Google. And in a blog post late last night, Google hit back. The search engine giant announced plans to get into the operating system business. Marketplace's Dan Gretsch reports.
It'll be called Google Chrome OS. OS stands for operating system, the standard software that controls a PC. Google said in an official blog post that its new operating system would be defined by its speed, simplicity, and security. This latest move by Google is aimed at Microsoft's jugular. The operating system is at the heart of computing, and it's the foundation of Microsoft's business model. The announcement has already raised questions about Google's dominance in computing. Google CEO Eric Schmidt says his company's focus is consumer choice. He spoke to Marketplace's Kai Ryssdal in an interview recorded last week.
We feel that as long as we are really focused on consumer benefit, in other words, if the action we take really does benefit the average consumer, that the rest of the industry, the rest of the government, will get around that because consumers speak in democracies.
Google Chrome OS will first appear on netbooks in the second half of 2010. No response or blog posts yet from Microsoft. I'm Dan Gretsch for Marketplace.
To everything there is a season, and today kicks off a new earnings season on Wall Street. Alcoa will be the first company on the Dow Jones Industrial Index to report quarterly profits. Of course, most companies have been hammered by the recession. But for Wall Street investors, it's not so much about the losses. It's about how well companies can play the expectations game. Our senior business correspondent, Bob Moon, has more.
For the most part, business executives have been offering a relatively bleak outlook, and that's caused analysts to set their sights low. So even a slide in profits could be viewed as a positive sign, so long as the news isn't awful. Ted Weisberg is head of Seaport Securities. He says Wall Street hates nasty surprises, so the trick is managing expectations in the opposite direction.
Where things are not as bad as anticipated. Now, whether or not everything is purposely being guided more negative than in fact it is, I guess we'll never know the answer to that.
At Fort Pitt Capital Group, Chief Investment Officer Charles Smith has his own set of expectations. He says corporate America has been focused on cutting costs, so it ought to have something to show for that.
The bright side of 500,000 or 600,000 jobs lost every month is that earnings are going to be better than people expect.
That's provided, of course, that the weeks ahead don't end up living down to expectations. I'm Bob Moon for Marketplace.
Market expectations are certainly down this morning. Oil prices are down to $62 a barrel. That's down more than 10 bucks from just a week ago, and less than half of what a barrel of oil cost last year. The reason for those low prices? Well, in part, it's worries that the global economy is not going to recover very quickly. Tokyo's Nikkei Index dropped 2.33% this morning. That is on an unexpected drop in machinery orders. Hong Kong's Hang Seng Index fell 0.8%. And in Europe, things are still looking pretty glum. The FTSE is down about 0.1%. Germany's DAX is also off 0.1%. And Paris's CAC 40 is off 0.5%. Yesterday, U.S. markets hit two-month lows. The Dow Jones Industrial Average fell about 2%. The NASDAQ and S&P 500 were also down about 2%. And the markets could probably use a little IT help this morning. Websites for the NASDAQ and the New York Stock Exchange were among those hit by a massive cyber attack yesterday. A rogue virus overwhelmed the sites and in some cases shut them down entirely. Several government agencies were hit as well, including the Departments of Homeland Security and Defense and the Federal Trade Commission. The virus also hit South Korea.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Thomson Reuters, a source of intelligent information to businesses and professionals around the world. Thomson Reuters, knowledge to act.
Where do most poor people live in America? If you answered the inner city, you'd be wrong. Most low-income people now live in suburbs than cities. Marketplace's Jeff Tyler reports on the changing face of poverty.
Rising levels of unemployment have been pretty much the same in cities and suburbs. Alan Berube is a senior fellow with the Brookings Institution.
That's a change from previous recessions where the cities seemed to take it on the chin and the suburbs avoided the worst.
He says Chicago exemplifies the national trend. When Nixon was president, about a third of Chicago's poor lived in the suburbs. Now it's about half. 41-year-old Vanita Thomas is one of those people. She has an MBA and worked as an accountant until she was hospitalized for a serious illness. After that, she managed to find a few temp jobs until the economy went cold.
Nobody was hiring. You couldn't find a temp assignment. Everything went dead.
She went on unemployment, but that only lasted until the fall.
September, my unemployment's running out, and basically my landlord, he's saying, you're a nice tenant, but Ms. Thomas, if you can't afford the rent, I have to put you out.
A friend from her church let Thomas stay with her in the suburbs. When she still didn't have money for rent last January, Thomas had to move into a local shelter.
That day was like my ground zero because that's when the reality really hit me that I was homeless.
She lived dormitory style with roommates. Thomas was grateful to have a roof over her head, but angry about her circumstances.
Years back, they told you, go to school, get an education so you get a good job, so you would never have to worry about being in a situation like that. I kept saying, how can this happen to me?
Some of the increased poverty in the suburbs has happened gradually. Immigrants who traditionally settled in inner cities are increasingly moving directly to suburbs. That's where the jobs are, or were. Again, Alan Berube with Brookings.
This recession is going to perhaps accelerate the long-term trend toward the suburbanization of poverty.
Some of the suburban poor will bounce back. Vanita Thomas got a job with a call center. She earns less than she did as an accountant, but it's enough for an apartment. And she can set aside some money each month, aware that she's just a couple paychecks away from being homeless. I'm Jeff Tyler for Marketplace.
And in Los Angeles, I'm Stacey Vanek Smith. Thanks for joining us.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.